what I hear is that would be terrifying. That would be admitting that I need someone, that I, that, and that worse, I actually might believe that I'm not worth them. I'm not worth it. That insecurity sneaks in. So now, in order to name and own jealousy, I need to understand that I have a desire to have this connection. I have fear that it might be interrupted. And under that, I am insecure that I might not be enough or measure up.
You're listening to Love and Libido with me, your host, Dr. Emily Jamia. The goal of this podcast is to educate and inspire. My hope is that you will learn tools to create connection and cultivate passion, both within yourself and in your relationships. Here's what's coming up on today's episode. Ooh, jealousy. Think you're immune to it? Guess again. I treat couples who are jealous of their partner's relationship with the kids, with the dog, with their career, not to mention with other people. It's an emotion that we can identify in babies as young as 6 months old, but it's not one we talk about enough. What is jealousy versus envy? How can we foster a healthier relationship with jealousy so that we can use it to learn about ourselves and develop a stronger connection to our partners? Jealousy expert Dr. Jolie Hamilton, who gave a TED Talk all about it, is going to help us make sense of this very complex emotion. Jolie is also a research psychologist, a professor of human sexuality, and a sex and relationship coach. Let's dive in. Today's episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. My inbox is flooded with DMs on a daily basis with people just like you who want help with their sex and relationship issues. I wish I had time to answer all your questions, but luckily other resources are available. Look, without healthy relationships and a calm mind, being truly happy and at peace is hard. The good news is help is available. You deserve to be happy, and now you don't have to worry about finding an in-person therapist near you. BetterHelp is customized online therapy that offers video, phone, and even live chat sessions with your therapist, so you don't have to see anyone on camera if you don't want to. It's much more affordable than in-person therapy, and you can start communicating with your therapist in under 48 hours. Join the millions of people who are seeing what online therapy is really about. And as a special offer to Love and Libido listeners, you can get 10% off your first month of professional therapy at betterhelp.com/Dr. Emily. That's betterhelp.com/Dr. Emily. Thanks again to BetterHelp for sponsoring this episode. Okay, Jolie, welcome to the show. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Thanks for having me, Emily. It's always a pleasure to talk to somebody about love and relationships.
So, you know, a lot of feelings come up in relationships. There's a lot of love and joy and passion and also anger and hurt. And one feeling that comes up a lot that I don't think we talk enough about is jealousy. And that has been the focus of your research and another book that you're working on. And so I was like, I have to have her back on the show to talk about that. And you do a lot of work for people who are in non-monogamous relationships and polyamorous relationships, but you also look at people who are in monogamous relationships. And is it fair to say that no matter what your relationship structure is, that jealousy is a feeling you might count on having?
No, to put it lightly, Emily, to put it lightly, you know, I think the number one thing that draws me to jealousy is its ubiquitousness. Jealousy is natural. It's normal. We can spot it as early as 6 months old. It's hardwired and it's there for a reason. So to pretend any otherwise is foolhardy, right? Because it can come up and knock you off your feet, just like a wave at the ocean. So yes, jealousy, it doesn't really matter what kind of relationship. The difference, the biggest difference is people who are in consciously non-monogamous relationships, they know they're inviting jealousy in through the door, most of them. And if they don't, I let them know right away. And the monogamy though, it writes checks it can't cash. Monogamy often convinces us that we won't have to feel jealous because we've got our person there, done, nice and tidy. But if you just look at the math, jealousy is a problem of being worried that I'll have my love bond with my beloved other interrupted. So if I have a beloved other, jealousy is possible. Boom.
Oh, definitely. I mean, I can't tell you how many monogamous couples I've worked with over the years who
are insanely jealous of their partner's relationships with the kids or with the dog or with their career. I mean, it's not always about their relationship with another potential sexual partner. I mean, jealousy will find its way to creep in no matter what.
Totally. And you're pointing out something really important. So jealousy and envy are a little bit different, but they can mimic each other, and they can oftentimes people will feel like one is more acceptable than the other. So I'll have people tell me, oh, I'm not jealous. Oh, maybe a little envious. And then they'll describe a scenario. And I'm like, oh, that is actually jealousy. There is a difference. And the reason it matters is because jealousy at core is a problem of threes, right? It's a problem of me, this beloved that I love, this person I want to be connected to, and the fear that another person or imagined person, so something like work or Instagram, can become a third mm-hmm. because we imagine that they will interrupt our love bond, literally that they will interject. Envy is more about longing. Envy is about this problem of twos. Either I want what you have or I want to be who you are. And so okay. this can also show up in our relationships. And it can be a huge problem. If we have envy going on, we can accidentally be imagining that we are not, you know, whole and good enough in ourselves. But when jealousy shows up, there's a special case, because now I have this third, whether it's real or imagined, this third who I can aim the anger and fear and sadness and anticipatory grief, I can aim it at them and say, you're the reason. And I can get angry at my beloved and say, you have to stop this. With envy, there's not quite that tension. And so jealousy often slips away. It's slippery. It wants to hide because it can be so evocative. It wants to hide in the shadows.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you for pointing out the difference, because I think a lot of people use those words interchangeably, and there are some important differences. I think that jealousy is more possessive. Is that a fair statement to make? Yeah,
it is. Especially when we're talking about sort of a traditional in this culture we live in, right? Just think about every song you've ever listened to. Think about every rom-com you've ever watched. If there is any element of jealousy, it's about the idea that I have this person, I want this person, and most importantly, they're mine. They're mine. And there's a bit of ownership, and there can be, so possessiveness, ownership, and entitlement can show up. Mm-hmm. And right there, we have the start of actually not really engaging with our beloved, right? Like we're not really engaging them. Now we're engaging in a different thing altogether, because if I have them versus I'm with them, a big change of sentence, right? Like that is
definitely important. Yeah. If I have them versus I'm with them.
Yeah.
Big difference. Yeah. Jealousy is a complex emotion. And you spoke in your TED talk about all the different feelings that make up this bigger feeling of jealousy. Can you talk about that a little bit? Because I think a lot of times, like you said, it's slippery. It wants to be hidden. A lot of people don't recognize it, or it might show up in a way that represents a more familiar feeling, but what it really is jealousy. So what emotions are involved in jealousy?
Yeah, great point. So jealousy is a complex emotion made of other more primal emotions, like fear. You can't separate jealousy from fear, because it is literally a fear of losing or losing that connection, right? But also anger, sadness, grief, anxiety, fear's annoying little cousin. Anticipatory grief is one of my favorites, that grief mm-hmm. that comes when we think something might be interrupted and we start painting a picture and imagining a future, or we even cast our vision back and we're like, what if this had happened, and we start creating an alternative reality that didn't even happen, but now we have this anticipatory grief, like what if I'd lost them? And then finally, shame. Oh. A lot of people, myself included, feel shame around jealousy. We were taught very early that we should share, and that jealousy is, it's not just that it's bad, though. Actually, this is interesting. The word naughty comes up. Like, it's naughty, and not in the fun way.
Yeah.
Except also in the fun way, because jealousy is arousing, right? So it's naughty. It brings this like little kid tendency to grab and take it wakes that up in us. Most people that come to me to work on jealousy, they come, they've sought me out because they want to work on jealousy. And then immediately in sessions, they have no recollection of ever feeling jealous. They don't recall that. They're like, no, I'm angry or I'm sad, or I'm feeling very shamed, or I'm feeling like I'm very depressed. And because the word jealousy, just owning it, it can send us into a shame spiral and yeah. we push away. And now the problem is we start forgetting what the original inspiration for this was. I'm afraid that I'll lose this connection. And as soon as you lose sight of that, it's really easy to point at your partner and be like, they're doing something wrong and they need to fix that, because that's what jealousy likely inspires, is you fix that so I will feel different.
Yeah.
Instead of the actual work on jealousy.
Totally. And I can see that as being such a hard feeling to own because of the shame around it. And who wants to be labeled as like the jealous one? I mean, I think the association with that is like, oh, you know, that means I'm insecure. That means I don't have self-esteem. But at the end of the day, I think what we all want is to feel secure and to have an attachment with someone that we can trust and that we can count on. And I think, like you said, it's a very natural feeling if we feel like that bond that we value so much is threatened in some way, jealousy is going to come up.
Right. And, you know, it's interesting to me as my first study on jealousy was focused on polyamorous individuals. And those, when I called people to that study, it was a pretty even split. People, women, men, non-binary folks all responded to that call to action. I now am running a study on jealousy in monogamous individuals. Women showed up. I instantly had my subsample of women. Men, much slower to the party, much, much slower. And it happens over and over again that what I hear is men not wanting to admit it. And I think you just said exactly what the problem is. What I hear is that would be terrifying. That would be admitting that I need someone, that I actually might believe that I'm not worth them, I'm not worth it, that insecurity sneaks in. So now in order to name and own jealousy, I need to understand that I have a desire to have this connection. I have fear that it might be interrupted. And under that, I am insecure that I might not be enough or measure up.
Yeah.
Well, damn, that's hard.
Totally, totally. So can you talk a little bit about your initial study and what interested you in the topic?
Yeah. So I got interested in jealousy. It's been following me around, literally. I accidentally tattooed the kanji symbol for zeal on my back. Not accident, like I knew it was zeal, but I didn't think about what zeal was the root for. Zeal, okay. The root for zealous to jealous. There you go.
Okay.
It's been following me.
Yeah.
Yeah. At the start of my own exploration into non-monogamy, I tattooed the symbol for intensity of life, zeal, being excited, right? Yeah. And when I entered fully into non-monogamy, the first word we banished in our household of three adults was jealousy. Nope, just jealousy, just nope. So we transitioned all of our thinking to sometimes you might be envious, true, but jealousy, we'll just banish it. Because you know, that works really well. You just, you know, you'll hold the beach ball of jealousy underwater and it'll be fine. Nothing bad like that. That beach ball doesn't, you know, pop up anywhere unexpected like they always do. It was kicking my butt.
What a great analogy.
Yeah. It's awful. It's terrible. So I lived it. I lived the not talking about it. And it destroyed our triad. It destroyed the way we were trying to build a family that we really were enjoying in a lot of ways because we couldn't talk about it. And I did what I do. I go whole hog. And I was like, I'll just get a PhD in this. It's fine. So when I set out to do the work though, it was hard because I knew I was committing to studying something, to pulling something close in my life that most people really don't want to look at. And what has turned up is that even in non-monogamous circles where it's a little bit more accepted that we'll have to talk about it, it's still a very tender topic that people want to imagine they have evolved past, or they can outgrow, or they can just transform, or they can cure. My argument would be this: Let's not try to cure jealousy. Let's allow it to be the archetypal universal pattern that it is. And just remember that jealousy is neutral until we decide how to act on it. It's information that I care about someone. And now I get to come back into my adult-centered self and decide what to do. If you're longing for that attachment bond, great. Maybe go back and listen to that first episode and think about, how do I ask for what I want? How do I connect to my partner? How do I ritualize that connection? Because the jealousy is a beautiful signal that you want your partner. Please don't waste that signal.
I love that. And it's, I don't talk about jealousy probably enough with my clients, but you know, it makes me think of the way I talk about other feelings. I really don't like to categorize feelings as being good or bad. I like to categorize them more as being comfortable or uncomfortable, but even the uncomfortable feelings usually are trying to send us a message. And if we learn how to relate with that feeling and experience it and express it in moderation, it usually ends up giving us a gift of some time. A lot of times that gift is a lot of information and insight as to what we need. You know, our emotions are called feelings usually because we feel them in our body. And I think anyone who has experienced jealousy can like get in touch with what that's like. Just as we're talking about it, I mean, I feel just through this conversation, I feel like that kind of flush a little bit. I mean, jealousy is a very powerful feeling, and probably in part because we don't talk about it enough. And I think by putting it out there and owning it, we take away some of its power, and only then can we start to learn from it and use it like you describe.
Yeah. Where are you feeling it in your body? This is the first step. I developed a 5-step framework for dealing with jealousy out of the study. Where do you identify it?
The okay. sensation? So I feel it in my chest and in my throat.
High for you. It's mm-hmm. high. Mm-hmm. Some people describe it down low. It's deep in their gut and it's twisting and it's heavy. And some people feel it heavy on the midpoint of their lungs, like an elephant sitting on their chest. And occasionally people describe like tingles up the back of their neck or a locked jaw.
Oh, I feel that a little bit too. Yeah.
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 No, identifying the signal, the sensation of jealousy is so important, because if I can't identify the sensation, then likely I won't realize that I feel jealous until I've done something possessive. Until I have shouted something across the room or taken some action or monitored my partner's phone or snuck in the other room or something possessive, something that I think of myself like, why did I do that? That is not like me. That's usually the first time people notice the jealousy might be on the scene, when they've already done something they're not proud of. So I want people to take the time to get to identify those sensations of jealousy, so that when they first come up, you feel that flush. You're like, ooh, guess who's on site? Jealousy. I don't have to know why to know it's here. And from there, just name it and say, oh, jealousy's here. Cool. It isn't good or bad. It's fine. Just like anger, not good or bad. And in fact, I am vehemently opposed to the APA's definition of jealousy, where they say it is, you know, it's a negative emotion. That's right out of the gate. It's a negative emotion. It's information. And our culture teaches us that it means something bad. What if it didn't? What if the message was, you have information. Now, within the relationship agreements you have, what should that information do? What do we do next? Because I like to name it and then move to navigating your needs. If I'm in a monogamous relationship, cool, what's going on? Do I feel an objective threat, or do I feel an imagined threat? The imagination is incredibly powerful.
Oh yeah.
It's not like an imagined threat is less, but if it's an imagined threat, now I have actually a me problem. And I want to see people heading right to their therapist or their coach or someone who can help them unpack that me problem. If there's an objective threat, cool. Do you have explicit, clear agreements with your partner? Do you actually know, or are you relying on something akin to what my first jealousy interview said? Oh, we don't need agreements. He knows the rules. Does he know? It's like, going.
You're like, let me know how that works out.
Right. And then we spent about 45 minutes talking, and about 30 minutes in, she said, oh my God, we have no agreements. Oh my God. They've been married for 30 years. Wow. And she wasn't struggling with jealousy every day, but when it came up, there was no way to deal with negotiating because they didn't negotiate as part of their relationship. So their monogamy was on this like teeter-totter. It was very tentative, actually. And so from there, this was a person, I was doing a very casual interview, not for my actual study. And I asked her to report back to me what she did. And she said that they started having conversations about what their actual explicit agreements were. And it gave them more leeway to have more adventurous experiences because they weren't both just trying to walk this tightrope line of like, oh, let's not mess up.
In the dark.
In the dark and not knowing what the heck you're doing. And that lets you adventure. It lets you know that when jealousy comes up and gives you that information, like, okay, let's check into those agreements again. Let's figure out how I get this need met. Do I need to be reassured? Do I want a reminder? And it is 100% okay to need reassurance that you are still loved. That's part of what jealousy wants.
If you're a penis owner, you need to know about FirmTech. FirmTech has rings designed to increase sexual stamina and give you stronger, longer-lasting erections. Their high-tech ring gives you the added benefit of providing health data based on the quality of your erections. We have devices to measure the quality of our sleep and how many calories we burn, so why shouldn't we have a medtech device to measure the health of our erections? Well, now we do. Visit myfirmtech.com and use code IKNOWEMILY for 20% off your purchase. Thanks to FirmTech for sponsoring this episode.
Yeah. And so would you go so far as to say that jealousy or experiencing jealousy is adaptive?
Absolutely. It is 100%. So evolutionary psychology will tell us jealousy is adaptive for one reason. They talk a lot about how it, you know, it's about passing DNA, right? It's about a lot of stuff that comes pretty close to rape apology, and I'm not a fan of.
Okay.
But when I think about it as adaptive to beings with prefrontal cortex, right? Like, and the ability to be rational, think, sure, if I'm conscious of jealousy and I can name it, then it absolutely is adaptive, not just on an evolutionary scale, which will take many, 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 many generations, but on the scale of right now in this relationship, I'm feeling jealousy. Now, if I witness myself, we talk about it, we take action, we co-create the relationship we actually want, we shift the system, and we bring it into finely tuned state. Mm-hmm. That is absolutely adaptive. And running away from it is only taking you further away from the relationship you actually want to have.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm so glad you remind people about the prefrontal cortex. So, you know, for anyone listening who isn't aware of the, you know, many, the many uses of that part of the brain, you know, the prefrontal cortex is involved in rational thinking, decision-making, planning. It's really where our personality resides, and it's not fully formed until we're about 25 years old, which is why, you know, teenagers tend to be so impulsive and irrational because their sweet little brains aren't completely developed. But typically what I always tell my clients happens when we experience an emotion, you know, ideally it's processed through our prefrontal cortex so that we can make sense of it and then act in a way that is not completely crazy. That doesn't always happen though. Sometimes the emotion is so intense that it goes the other direction into our nervous system and activates that fight or flight response, which is, I think, when you see people do something crazy in like a jealous rage. And jealousy can definitely get out of control as well. I mean, we see crimes of passion and murders and, you know, all kinds of things like that, which again, I think is why it's so important to talk about this feeling that everybody has there. I mean, just through this conversation, I'm realizing how much shame people have about this very normal feeling. And if we would just talk about it a little bit, destigmatize it, I think that there's a lot that we could learn from it.
Yeah, it's totally true. There are a couple of tip-offs I like to give people. If you catch yourself saying, oh, he's just jealous, or oh, I'm just jealous. The word just is your tip-off. You've diminished it. You're writing it off like it's not important. So just tune your ear in and see, am I a person who has trouble holding jealousy as just a normal, natural part of life? Cool. If that's true, then maybe it's because exactly what you said, Emily, that jealousy, instead of allowing yourself to feel it and rationally deal with it, you feel it through the sensations and your nervous system completely dysregulates. And I made a workshop called Jealousy Rewired with Elizabeth Kristoff, and it was designed specifically to help people regulate their nervous system around jealousy. Because if you don't have the ability to regulate your nervous system, it's really not the time to try to negotiate an agreement. That's when we're more likely to act in those possessive, violent, yes, but also controlling and coercive. So there's overt violence, and I'd love to put a stop to all that, but I'd also like to stop the monitoring and the coercion and all of that, really, like that subtext of violence that's happening. Mm-hmm. And that so many of us think we rationalize it when it comes to jealousy. Like, but I was jealous.
Leads to a lot of boundary violations.
And it's just not going to be a yummy, juicy relationship like that. No. So, and jealousy can be erotic. So
yeah, let's talk about that for just a second.
Right. So there's the flip side of it. In my study, I found about 33% of the participants experienced jealousy as somewhat arousing. They used the story of jealousy. They felt it as arousing. Well, I mean, just physiologically, that makes sense, right? We just listed all the ways it lights up our nervous system. Yeah. Now, if you tie that to sort of a kinky, like, I'm jealous, and you sort of flip the script, right? Things that are perverse. Perverse is just the same as inverse. We flip it around and we make it erotic. When I found that participants felt that way, I was like, oh, I do too. Right. Okay, cool. That's how I've been working with jealousy this whole time. Mm-hmm. And the cool thing about that is it's so welcoming. Like, my psyche feels so welcome. Like, oh, you're jealous. Cool. What if that's fun in this moment? What if you establish safety, you connect to your person, you establish the relationship you want, and you let yourself enjoy the fact that they're wanted and desired and they're safe for you. And I have found that's incredibly powerful, not just for de-escalating jealousy, but for just having more fun in bed, period.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, one thing that comes to my mind is couples who I work with who are on the heels of like a betrayal or an infidelity and experience this heightened sense of arousal or desire for their partner, which does not make any sense to them at all because they've just been horribly betrayed, yet they are super turned on. And it's, I think, this whole like mate guarding phenomenon that happens where we want to like, you know, put our scent all over our mate and reclaim them as our own. So let me ask you, you know, for people who are in non-monogamous relationships, I think there's this assumption, and you said that in the beginning, that it's not that people who are choosing polyamory or consensual non-monogamy are not jealous, but I think there's assumption that you can't be a jealous person in order to be non-monogamous. But I'm wondering if what a lot of people realize is that a little bit of jealousy is part of what turns them on. And the only way you can do that really in a way that's safe and not traumatizing is by, you know, making it part of your relationship agreement and making it consensual. And then you can kind of play with it like you're describing.
Right. So I like to think of, so non-monogamy, first off, you can be jealous, depressed, anxious. You can be all the things and still be successfully non-monogamous. It takes some effort, just like all relationships do, but don't worry about that. You don't have to somehow be like a magic unicorn, you know, but the experience of creating a non-monogamous, a consensually negotiated, conscious non-monogamy, it's not an either or. This isn't like I'm monogamous or I'm non-monogamous. Like, they're not two different camps. It is much more a vast spectrum at which almost nobody is really all the way at the extremes. In fact, we're sort of dancing along this spectrum because, well, do you have other friends? Do you share intimate stories with them? Do you have things that you would talk to them about that you wouldn't necessarily share with your partner because it's just irrelevant? Yeah. So most of us have the experience of multiplicity in relationship. And if you want to do that in the arena of sexual tension, yeah, you got to negotiate it really, really well, but it also doesn't have to be an all or nothing. I like to think of it as creative monogamy. Maybe we've agreed to be sexually monogamous. Let's get clear on what that means. Do we mean kissing? Do we mean stroking? Do we mean, what exactly do we mean? Do we mean flirting over text? What are the limits of what we want to be exclusive? And where are we able to be expansive? Where is it okay? For example, a thing I see all the time is people who are like, totally cool. If we go out to a party, you can flirt, you can dance. I mean, there's a song about it from the 60s. You can dance with whoever you want. Mm-hmm. I'm taking you home, right? That could be considered that an expansive, a creative monogamy because it's negotiated. And right there, that's where, yeah, jealousy can play a role. And if it's done well, it can play a really supportive role. And if it's not done well, well, then learn from it. Like, we're going to fall down. I still fall down. I had a jealous fit last winter when my husband was dating someone else and I lost it. I'm like, oh my God, this is my whole life's work. How can I be here? And so he sat with me. We sat up in bed until 2 o'clock in the morning. He sat with me and he didn't try to fix it. And he didn't offer to change what he was doing because we'd already negotiated it. He just sat with me while I felt the feelings. And eventually those feelings turned for me to a bit of erotic energy, but they also turned back into security because I witnessed him sitting with me, being present to like, wow, this is really hard. And I know it's in alignment with your values. So I'll be patient. Yeah. We'll get through this. And we did. And it was great. And it was no problem. And our relationship only deepened because we were patient with each other. I got to be messy. He got to be patient. And it's been the other way around too.
Totally. Yeah. I think that reassurance goes so far. And I think a lot of people feel bad or wrong or less than maybe for seeking a little bit of reassurance from their partner, yes. But it doesn't take much, you know, just like you said, sitting with you and talking with you and creating and holding space for you to express yourself, you know, right. Is what yeah. Makes the jealousy and go away.
I hear something pretty frequently from my quieter clients. And they'll say like, what they know, she knows I love them. Why do I need, like, I'll let her know if it changes. Just hard stop. That's a hard stop in my office. I'm like, mm-hmm. Nope. If you want to have a relationship that has a foundation of some security, reassurance is going to be a normal part of it. Just like it is when you're raising kids and they fall on their bike and you help them up and you're like, yep. And you're good. You've got this. You're strong. You can do it. Those moments of reassurance are a sign that the relationship is working, not that it's not working.
Exactly. I always coach my couples on a little technique I label the double R technique. It's reflect and reassure. So first, reflect back what your partner has just expressed. That's what makes us feel seen and heard, which is, I think, what a lot of us want. And then reassure them that you're not going anywhere or that you love them or whatever it is you think they need in that moment. That alone, that little double R technique can like make most problems go away.
So much. I love it so much. I love how easy that is to remember.
Yeah. Now, we can't talk about jealousy without talking about compersion. Is compersion really the opposite of jealousy, or can people experience both at the same time?
Yes, to both of those questions. Okay. I studied
Jungian. Well, first of all, define compersion for people who don't know. I'll let you do it since you're the expert.
So compersion, I define it very simply. It's joy for another person's joy. Just that simple. It originated, the word C-O-M-P-E-R-S-I-O-N, it originated out of the polyamorous world, but it's not limited to that. And I don't want to limit it to that. It's such a great emotion. Let's have more of it. The reason I said yes to both of those questions is I studied Jungian psychology, which means I studied everything archetypes, everything about polarities, right? There is an oppositional quality to jealousy and that desire to squeeze and constrict and not and possess, and compersion, which has this expansive joy for other and open and warm, right? So there's an oppositional quality, and you can feel two things at one time. No problem. We feel happy and sad at the same time, and we call it bittersweet. Maybe we need to invent, in fact, another word that is when I feel compersive and jealous at the same time. Maybe there is a word waiting to be born, but I promise it can feel both absolutely oppositional and if you can open a little space when you're feeling jealous by getting, by soothing your nervous system, by coming into regulation, reminding yourself that you did negotiate your boundaries, you've asked for reassurance, can you also be a little happy for what they're experiencing? Could you just let yourself have that? Not for them, for you. That joy is yours. Mm-hmm. That's why it's so important. People often talk about compersion like it's something you do for your partner. It's not. Mm-hmm. Compersion, let it be selfish in the best possible way. Compersion is me letting myself feel joy because my partner is feeling joy. Yum.
Yeah, I know. You're right. That is a feeling we all could use a little more of. Yeah. I think if people would just stop and, like you said, create a little space for it, we might find that we feel it a lot more than we realize. And if we just stop and savor it a little bit, you know, that's reinforcing, right? And I think only then can you maybe find that you might experience that a little bit for your partner, even in situations where you wouldn't have considered that before.
Right. And start easy. I like to tell people, curate an experience of compersion. Like, pick a spot where it's easy for you. Like, you could start with a puppy. You know, can you feel happiness for a puppy's happiness while they're having a puppuccino? You probably can. Cool. Right.
I don't want awesome. That chew toy, but that's so fun to watch it. Them I'm so go happy. At it.
Exactly. So super easy. And then work your way up to watching your partner totally engaged in something that has nothing to do with you, but they're in the zone, right? But maybe it's not about another person. They're just in the zone and enjoy that, feel it, nurture that compersive feeling, let yourself identify the sensations, feel it, relax. Then when you're in a moment, for instance, like you're at a party or a work event and you see your partner across the room, and they're engaged in a dialogue and they look lit up and you see it. And then you notice who they're talking to. And that person is attractive. And you're like, this can go so many ways because I can let myself imagine into this jealous rage, or I can feel compersion for the fact that right there in that moment, my partner's feeling seen.
Yeah.
And that's yum. That's awesome.
I mean, that's so loving. More people. Right. Yeah, I think.
Right. But it does take practice. And it's okay that it takes practice.
Definitely. Definitely. Oh, well, I could sit and talk to you forever, but unfortunately we're out of time. Thank you so much for joining me again. Where can people learn more about you and find your work?
Yeah. So if people want to learn more about jealousy and you'd like to grab my 5-step framework for dealing with jealousy, go to listentojoli.com and you can grab that. It's a quick 20-page ebook, lines those steps up so that you don't have to take notes this whole time. And just grab that. And if you want to hear stories about it, you can check me out at Project Relationship Podcast. There are a couple episodes on jealousy there where I go deeper into the topic.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much. I'll be sure to link everything in the show notes so you won't miss a thing. And until next time.
Thanks again for listening to Love and Libido with me, your host, Dr. Emily Jamia. If you enjoyed today's episode, be sure to subscribe and drop me a 5-star review. Share with a friend who might find it interesting. As much as we can learn from experts, nothing makes us feel more connected than hearing from each other. If you have a story that relates to today's episode or just a general question about sex or your relationship, visit loveandlibido.com and I'll share it on an upcoming episode. Be sure to visit my website, emilyjamia.com, to see my latest blogs and to check out my online workshop. Subscribers to my podcast can use code HALFOFF. Finally, you can follow me across all the social media channels for daily sex and relationship tips at Dr. Emily Jamia. Thank you so much for tuning in.